Welcome to the Full of Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:27 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is December 23rd. Today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. It has been an eventful week across a whole range of sectors. Wall Street in particular has been particularly strong. This is the fourth consecutive day to the upside. The Dow Jones is finishing out the week up 1%, the S&P up just less than that, but it's following four very strong days to the upside, to such an extent that the Dow and the S&P are back up to test their October highs, and that's quite a remarkable advance against the context of what was particularly bearish sentiment at the beginning of the week. The other side of that is that U.S. Treasuries were decidedly weak this week. So that strong move on stock markets has been, you've had the exact mirror image of that in the bond markets. Treasuries were right up there testing the 147 area, which was the peak earlier this year, but have pulled back steadily, and they're back below 145. And in fact, they were down over a point today. They're down to 142. The oil market was also notably strong this week. It was up for five consecutive days. Its current West Texas Intermediate is currently at just a shade under $100. So it's rallied about $5 during the week. The stock markets generally have been quite firm. The European stock markets were all in positive territory at the end of the week. They have not rallied to the same extent as the US markets. And in Asia, the Chinese market has been particularly weak. There was an upside key reversal. It was either early this week or late last week. We haven't had any additional follow-through. The market is oversold in the short term, but it is badly in need of a catalyst to spark investor interest once more. There's reasonable calls to expect that you are going to get that catalyst at some point in the new year. At least part of the reason for that is because the government has been primarily aiming to bring down property prices. They've been successful in that aim. There's no need to continue to keep tightening. Inflationary pressures are moderating, and they have significant room to ease into this environment. So we can anticipate that there will be interest rate cuts, so cuts to the reserve requirement, and announcements of increased infrastructure development, whether that is in terms of broad infrastructure or in terms of social housing, remains to be seen. Elsewhere in Asia, markets such as Korea and Taiwan, which have been among the weaker in the region over the last couple of months, both rallied rather well in here. Now, part of the reason for that in Korea is that it looks increasingly likely that there's going to be a peaceful transition in North Korea, and that's good news for South Korea. But the relative strength leaders throughout the last year have been Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand, and the Philippines. They remain relative strength leaders. They've been largely range-bound in an environment where we've seen a large number of markets pull back very sharply in July, and they've been ranging below top formations for a persistent amount of time, at least the last 4 months. So there is cause to be positive in our outlook towards stock markets. Now, at least part of that reason is because leading markets are already breaking to new highs. The global autonomies, that's companies that are leveraged to the growth of the global consumer, that have strong balance sheets and are globally diversified and that dominate their respective niches, are relative strength leaders. They're absolute return leaders, and they're some of the best performing shares. So that is a cause for optimism, because if these big companies are doing well, then the global economy can't be that bad. Now, an additional factor is that most markets have found support in October. They found support above that Their September lows are their October lows in November, and they've posted a progression of higher reaction lows over the last 3 months. The S&P is finishing out the week above its 200-day moving average, so is the Dow Jones, the Nasdaq as well. So that's all positive. The focus of risk remains in Europe, and the somewhat less impressive stock market action there is largely reflects that additional risk in the Eurozone. The commodity market this week, gold was down. Well, gold spent most of the week in the region of 1600, a bit more and a bit less. It's finishing out the week around the 1600 level. That's the region of the 200-day moving average. It really does need to post a substantial upward dynamic to really convince people that demand is returning to dominance in the current area. It's been a difficult few weeks for commodities generally, and the majority of the industrial metals pulled back sharply in the early part of December, but they have all at least found short-term support. And the agriculturals in particular have steadied. Now they need to do more, particularly the grains and beans need to rally away from the lower side of their respective ranges. They need to extend those advances to really suggest that anything more than short-term steadying has been found here. But in the meat section, feeder cattle hit a new, as far as I know, all-time high yesterday. And that's an impressive move. That's incredible relative strength against a background of a rather soft environment generally in the commodity complex. Of course, that's being supported by a supply inelasticity argument where you've had the supply inelasticity because farmers have been slow to grow their respective herds because grains have been and feed costs have been very high, and it's been uneconomic. But at the same time, you're running into a demand-driven environment where rising incomes right across Asia and Latin America are driving increased per capita consumption of just about all meats, and that is helping to result in higher prices. And there doesn't appear to it's a remarkably consistent trend, particularly in feeder cattle, and it doesn't look like there's anything has happened yet to really question potential for additional medium-term upside here. If we think about the long term here, then Europe has got to be front and center in our considerations as we move into 2012. The big question is whether the euro will survive. The euro will survive. Currencies don't just disappear. But the question is, how many members is it going to have? When we look at the government bond spreads of various eurozone countries, then you can break them down into three specific categories. There are the countries such as Germany, Austria, Finland, and even France, where their spreads have pulled back sharply in December. Those spreads widening out versus German bunds were pretty risible back in November, and we made that point in Fuller Money that Austrian bonds over German bunds widening out was getting to a point where there was an irrationality creeping into the market. Now, the second group of those sovereign spreads would have to have Italy and Spain, potentially Ireland, where you've had a spike in the spread over German bunds, but it has pulled back somewhat. Then you have Portugal and Greece, and the Greek 10-year government bond is currently 35%, 3,500 basis points over German bunds. It hasn't come down at all. If anything, it has continued to expand. Now, that's the market pricing in default. Now, the European authorities might decide that it's a technical default, or they can define it any way they like, but there is absolutely no confidence in the market that Greece is going to be able to pay back its debts. And Portuguese spreads haven't pulled back very much either. So There is cause for concern. The European equivalent of the TED spread has widened out considerably between November and December. It pulled back briefly in the last couple of days. But it needs to pull back substantially more to suggest that the stress in the European banking sector is decreasing rather than increasing. So there are legitimate concerns about the Eurozone. Now, the ECB has made some important statements in the last couple of weeks, particularly the fact this week that it lent out in the region of 450 billion euros in three-year notes to the banking sector. Now, that was a signal that they're not about to allow a European bank have its Lehman moment, and that they're going to do everything they can to provide liquidity to the banking sector. And that's a positive. That was at least part of the reason that you had a good rally on stock markets in here today. Now, in the next few days, we're going to have the Italians auctioning a large quantity of bonds. It's going to be at a time when the market is particularly quiet. So there are going to be opportunists attempting to influence the outcome of that auction. And it will be instructive to see who wins out in this case. Because if the Bank of Italy and Italian investors and the ECB give resounding support to the Italian government's attempts to roll forward its debt and raise additional funding, then that will be a clear signal that the one-way trade in some of this debt has ended, and that you are now seeing the ECB become much more proactive. And let's not forget that the president of the ECB is Italian. Now, he obviously has to appear to be impartial, but what happens in Italy has a fantastic bearing on the rest of the currency union. So something will have to be done to help Italy out. When we look at what stock markets are doing, we can see that there are completed overhead type 3 top formations. Some people class them as head and shoulders top formations that were completed back in July. The Nasdaq has pushed back up into its overhead range. So has the South African index. The Mexican index broke its progression of lower rally highs. The Philippine index is almost testing its high. The Indonesian index has largely been range-bound for a year. Those are all relatively positive outcomes. What we need to see is more markets pushing back up into their overhead trading ranges, sustaining moves above their 200-day moving averages, finding support at progressively higher levels. And if that tells us anything, it tells us that demand is returning at progressively higher levels. And we need to see an increasing number of markets breaking upwards and hitting new highs in the new year. There has been a bearish consensus that the first half of next year is going to be bad for stock markets and that it will be more positive in the second half of the year. Now, at least part of the reason for that sentiment is because there is so much to worry about in the Eurozone, but what we have to be is more solution-focused than problem-focused. The problems that are being exposed in the Euro area have been there for at least a decade. We are all now much more cognizant of exactly what the problems are. But what we need to be is more solution-focused. What is going to be the answer to these problems? Because that is what will drive markets. And the ECB taking a more proactive attitude is a positive for stock markets. We're starting to see that the Dow and the S&P are perhaps a little bit overbought in the very short term following a good rally this week, but it's testing the October highs. Very much beyond this level, we'll have had a progression of higher reaction lows and another higher rally high. And when I look at the Bloomberg WEI page, the Dow Jones is currently up 6% year to date, and the S&P is up 0.6%. And just about all other markets, particularly the major markets, are in negative territory. Now, Indonesia, the Philippines, and Thailand are also in positive territory this year. And that's a good relative performance. There hasn't been any impressive absolute performance in just about any stock market. That's unlikely to be repeated in 2012. We could have some the expectations for what could happen in 2012 are particularly low. Now, that tells us that people do not have long positions. There's a lot of cash on the sidelines. There is a lot of cash in short-term bonds. And bonds have been the best performing asset class this year. US Treasuries have lost upward momentum. UK gilts went down this week and tested the 2% area. There'd have to be a marked economic deterioration to sustain a move below 2%, but it will need an upward dynamic in terms of the yield to really signal that supply is getting the upper hand in that market. US Treasuries have been the safe haven asset, particularly shorter term debt, and it has all the characteristics of a bubble. At the top of every bubble, you get a massive increase in supply. And in sovereign bonds, governments have been printing paper like stink. But the number one aspect of a bubble is that it can continue for much longer than most people are willing to admit or even think about. And there isn't any real sign yet that it's over. So while yields are at historic lows, while they are perhaps overextended by some measures, we really would need a sustained move above 5% in terms of the long bond yield to really indicate that the bull market for this over the last 30 years has ended. And that is a big ask from current levels. The Fed remains extremely active. The ECB is becoming increasingly active. The UK is engaged in quantitative easing, and so is Japan. So are the Swiss. We're seeing an increasing number of central banks right across Asia and in Latin America lowering interest rates. They were some of the most aggressive in raising interest rates. They've got plenty of room to ease in this environment. Everyone's worried about slower economic growth. They're doing whatever they can to ameliorate their specific conditions to cater to that environment. But the result is that we have an increasing amount of liquidity hitting the market, and expectations are very low, and the chart action is not discouraging. We see that there are a progression of higher reaction lows in the majority of markets. And some of the best performers, particularly those that are leveraged to the growth of the global consumer, are outperforming in this environment. They've led throughout. They lead for a reason. And that's because we have 1.5 billion people entering the middle class in Asia, Latin America, the Middle East, and Africa over the next couple of decades. That's basically a quarter of humanity at current levels. Is going to be lifted out of poverty, and into the middle classes. It's also the greatest exodus, because we're getting a massive move from a rural environment to an urban environment. For the first time ever, humanity became predominantly urban in the last few years. More people now live in towns and cities than do in the country on a global basis. The growth of the city, the increasing urbanization, rise of the middle class, is a secular theme. It's likely to continue for at least the next few decades. There are billions of young people growing up, entering the workforce, needing education, housing, jobs, and infrastructure, and they aspire to the standard of living most people in the West take for granted. They're working hard to achieve it. And the companies that are leveraged to that growth are outperforming in no uncertain terms. The fact that they are also, in many cases, strong or reliable yielders is an added bonus for many investors, particularly in a low-yield environment where governments are particularly active in their respective sovereign markets. That isn't a situation that is really can be pursued indefinitely. The respective currencies will eventually bear some of that pressure. Now, the euro is at risk. If the euro continues to hold together and has all the members that it has today, then it is probably going to get weaker from here, because it will need to print quite a lot of additional money to cater for the vast debts that have been accrued, particularly in the financial sector, over the last decade, but also obviously in the sovereign sector. Gold has pulled back particularly sharply, but gold is a hard asset. Gold is the real money, and gold has been increasingly monetized in the eyes of investors. That changed somewhat in the last month, because gold pulled back, it lost its safe haven status and pulled back really very sharply. It remains to be seen whether it's going to find support in its current region, but this is a bit of a will it or won't it moment for gold, because it's back at its 200-day moving average. What gold did earlier this year was accelerate higher. Its overextension on the upside relative to the MA was almost as large as any that it has had in at least 10 years, which was almost 30%. That was an acceleration by any standard. Sentiment in the region of $1,900 was particularly bullish. Personally, I'm a little bit worried about gold, because I'm continuing to see people bring out forecasts for next year of 2,200 and 2,500 and 2,700, and that's in the region of $1,000 from here. So those are remarkably bullish forecasts. Now, I'm not saying that they can't occur. Any forecast is in there with a chance. But what we've seen is that the blow-off at 1,900 resulted in a large pullback. It subsequently rallied rather emphatically and entered a period of right-hand extension, and then it has pulled back violently once more. The sentiment has been damaged in here. And what we need to see from gold are clear upward dynamics. That it holds above its recent low and on the next pullback, and then pushes back up towards the MA and pushes back above it. It's already above the MA, pushes back up into its overhead trading range and pushes through it and above it. And those are necessary conditions to really indicate that demand is returning in here. Now, if it were to sustain a move below the recent lows, then we would be in a condition of a medium-term downtrend. And on previous occasions, it has to be noted that when gold has had a major pullback, it's pulled back by about 30%. And that could be a couple of hundred additional dollars from where we are right now. So this is a difficult period for gold. A significant additional pullback could probably be considered a buying opportunity. It remains to be seen whether where we are right now is a buying opportunity. The oil market is also interesting at this level. West Texas Intermediate, in particular, has broken its progression of lower rally highs. It's found support in the region of the 200-day moving average. It's pressuring the $100 level, and nothing has occurred to question potential for additional upside in here. Brent crude hasn't been nearly as strong. It still has a progression of lower rally highs since April. It would need a significant additional rally to really indicate that demand is returning to dominance. But that spread between Brent and WTI continues to narrow. And one wonders whether that arbitrage opportunity is part of the reason that WTI has rallied so emphatically over the last couple of weeks. This has been a difficult 6 months in terms of the markets. It's been a challenge to leave emotion aside and to address markets from the perspective of a behaviorist, and to look at markets and see what they are actually, what is there, rather than what we want to see or what we think we're going to see. That's unlikely to change in the next few months, but what the markets are currently telling us is that stock markets have rallied in a particularly uncertain environment, and that leaders continue to hit and lead to the upside. So that's definitely a positive. I think with that, I will leave you for the week. This is a big Santa year in the Tracy household. My daughters, who are 3 and 5, are counting down the sleeps. There's only 2 more sleeps to Santa. It's going to be an exciting weekend for us. I hope that everyone who listens to our audios is going to enjoy the weekend and the holidays. And I wish a happy Christmas to all of you.